Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Oberle, senior writer at VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePSD.com, and that's Mark Craig, NFL insider and Vikings writer at Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. This is the Eclipse version of the Vikings podcast. I'm sitting here trying to think of some Eclipse joke to start it off with, but I don't have one, so we'll just dive into it. Mark Kwesi and KOC had their press conferences this week, and by God, we know all what's going on now. We've got it all figured out. You guys out there at not Winter Park, but TCO, you guys got it all figured out because they were just totally forthcoming, weren't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, so you choose the Eclipse over grinding over the NFL draft. I don't quite understand that.
That was once in a lifetime deal. I had to do it.
Yeah, the information. There's when they start to say something, that's your Eclipse joke. Is the information that gets blocked out? Yeah.
There it is.
A lot of words, especially, you know, I don't know. Yeah, Kwesi was out there. I mean, they have these, and it's such and I suppose that, you know, because they put it on their website, it's a video, and everyone now in today's media will take it and just, you know, they got that's material. That's it's not no longer is it really information that is provided. It's just entertainment that, you know, someone will. That's why guys are so careful in what they say and what they don't say, because any little thing gets, taken and run different ways. And I guess in a bottom line situation, wasn't a lot said. There was not a lot gleaned from there.
Mark, do you guys, like, you know, you guys that have been around there forever as reporters and you know, and big outlets like the Tribune and such, do you ever, in a situation like that, you don't get a one-on-one at all with these guys where they, you know, after they do the thing for the video, for the website, which I was watching, you don't get a one-on-one or anything?
I mean, there hasn't been any real, like with Spielman. I used to go and talk to Spielman, but even my close relationship with Rick, a lot of background information for maybe after they made selections or maybe what they're looking at globally. But, you know, as he would laugh, you know, and say, I don't even tell my wife who we're going to pick. You know, there is a lot of and one thing I'm writing for the paper for Sunday, which has been a fun thing to do, because I've talked to a lot of old timers who are even, you know, that are on the Hall of Fame committee, that are even older than me, who go back to when the mock draft. The story is the kind of the history of the mock draft and the history of covering the draft from a media perspective. And it's funny to go back and it's just, even as old as I am, I didn't come in when the access was like they were, like, you know, Rick Goslin from Dallas talking about when he was in Kansas City, getting to know assistant coaches and coaches, and, you know, would leave the media where he worked with where the media was working, walk down the hallway, pop in and talk to coaches as they're watching, you know, prospects, sit, go into the head coach's office and be pouring coffee and talking to him about who they're going to take, stuff like that. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, I guess getting back to Kwesi, if you want to try and read, you know, for entertainment's sake, read into it. He was really pushing the, you know, hey, we're in love with a lot of more than one quarterback, kind of this. And I, you know, just a simple question as, hey, Kwesi, and this was, I asked him, you know, how many quarterbacks are you talking about in the first round? And he said, I'd love to tell you that, but that would make my conversation, you know, my phone calls a lot more difficult. He could have just chosen to say whatever to
seven of them.
Yeah, you manipulate whatever. You know, not even a question like that. It's like, it's, you know, so there's not a whole lot there. But I guess coming away, I sort of have a feeling that I sensed that there's a reservation that amongst them that we might not be in position to go up and get, you know, what, you know, everyone feels they're going to do it. They're going to, the Vikings are going to find the perfect. Really? Match. They're going to give what they need. They're going to go up and get the perfect guy, whether it's JJ McCarthy or Drake May. And we all live happily ever after. It's not going to be as clean as that. That's the sense I got from them saying, we're in love with a lot of quarterbacks, and there's a lot of traits that we like. And then O'Connell saying, you know, there's all, you know, they're sitting with all these guys, there's multiple like skills that you feel could be a good NFL quarterback. And just looking at it, you know, realistically, logically, you know, it's harder and harder for me to see them being able to go up and get certainly one of the top three quarterbacks, maybe not even one of the top four quarterbacks.
Really? Why not?
Well, because the first three teams all need quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I can't see New England at three getting out of, you know, starting a new coach, new regime, need a quarterback. Why? How? What? Yeah, I just can't fathom them trading out of that and not taking the third quarterback. And then four, I just, you know, Kyler Murray, where he's at in his career, how much he costs against the cap. I cannot see him, certainly cannot see them going back to 11. You know, maybe going to, if the Giants want a quarterback, they go to six.
They got a $40 million guy there.
But yeah, but then, well, it's but none of this makes sense anymore. There's the level of impatience in the NFL and what you have versus what, you know, the Giants, the guy who drafted Daniel Jones isn't there anymore. You know, it's a different guy. It's one of those, you know, it's just, you know, Justin Fields, you would think, you know, not too long ago, Justin Fields being in his third year, he wouldn't be gone, and they wouldn't be looking at drafting another guy. And then who knows, in two or three years, it could be another guy. So it's everything moves quicker. Everything, they're more aggressive. They're more impatient than they've ever been. So I could see the Giants, because I think the Giants, from what I understand, they can get out of his contract a little bit, you know, after another year. But I don't feel like they're going to take a quarterback there. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't see Arizona going clear to 11 because they got to get Marvin Harrison. There are a lot of receivers, but I feel like if they get out of that fourth spot, you know, they lose the best receiver, because, you know, I could see, you know, the Chargers taking the receiver at five. So, you know, and then when the Vikings traded to get that 23rd pick, you know, the assumption was they were going to package it with the 11 and go up. Well, that's the assumption now. But who knows? It could have been, hey, that's giving us a spot toward the middle to back of the first round, where you get a Bo Nix, Penix, maybe, you know, something like that. We're just saying there's more than, we all get locked in on what we think's going to happen, but it's never right anyways. So let's think outside the box a little here.
I've thought that from the start about what you said about Arizona. Why would they trade out of that when they've got their, you know, at least what people are saying, they've got their eyes set on Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, who knows if that's true, but they have that need. Kwesi said it when people were talking to him in the thing. He said, you got to have said at some point, you got to have a trade partner. And that's, you know, you've got you can have all the ammunition you want, but if nobody wants to trade out, trade up, then you got to sit what you are. Do you get the sense that I kind of feel like with what Kwesi did with Cousins was he had a number in mind and said, okay, if this is as far as I'll go, and if that ain't going to happen, we'll see you later. Do you have the same sense he might be that way here, where he will trade so much to move up, but he's got a benchmark. He's not going to sell the farm. He's not going to throw those two 11 and 23 and then next year's first and then some change on top of that, just so he can get up there and make sure to get that quarterback. Do you feel like there's a line somewhere else, there has to be, that he wouldn't cross, and he's got his number set, or else then he'll just live to fight another day?
Yeah, and even he said he made reference to it as, you know, that's your leverage. Your leverage is your walking away point. And that's just a lot of what they say is common sense stuff, but when they say it, it becomes news.
Right.
And that's their, you know, there's a limit there. He also said something very logical. It's like, you know, you don't get to pick you know, not all 32 teams get to pick the exact guy they want. So you balance it, you know, do you give up, you know, do you give up all those things you just said and go up and get the third best quarterback who may not be your number one? Or do you, you know, stay there and you take a swing at a Bo Nix who's, yeah, I mean, no one's going to, you know, initially going to do backflips about Bo Nix, you know, because they're not talking about Bo Nix
right
for months and months leading up to this. But Kwesi's, you know, logical explanation of it was, you know, those are the kind of guys that, hey, they may not be your number one guy, but you can build around them a lot better than you could if you gave up everything and went and got that one guy. So there is a balancing act that they're doing. You know, this is a big, I was doing a preview or writing a preview for one of the preview magazines, you know, and they wanted to know someone on the hot seat, a player on the hot seat.
Yeah, I asked that. Yeah.
I said, right now, did I mention this before?
No.
I said, because, you know, they got to, you know, this is like the Stone Age is still, you know, when they got to go get a picture of all you editors are always wanting your pictures. So I said, well, to me, the entire franchise, the hot seat is Kwesi. It's no one particular player. I mean, I guess I could pick a player for you, but, you know, his track record in drafting right now is not good overall. And this is a huge year. This is a make or break year. Now, it may not be make or break, it may not be determined make or break this time next year, but we can see it going that way. So this is huge. And he did say that, and I don't think he did this on purpose. It's another logical statement, you know, because he has his head coach is a former quarterback, you know, back up to Tom Brady. He's won a Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator. He's coached the position, calls his plays, blah, blah, blah. But he said, you know, Kevin O'Connell is the big driver of this process that they're going through. And then O'Connell kind of said, well, you know, it does help that I have all this experience, but it's basically a team process. So, you know, I don't think they're doing this, you know, purposely, but for me, it's that old, who's going to take responsibility for this, you know?
With your knife ready to cut them.
It's like, okay, you know, which neck goes in the guillotine? So you're saying it's him. Wait. He's saying it's everybody.
It's a team.
So
that's
funny.
Yeah.
I would say that Kwesi's hot seat is much hotter than O'Connell's.
You know, you sit there and listen to him talk, and Kwesi is always cool and poised and what have you, and he doesn't give you that sense that the guy just had two or one and a half bad drafts and that he is on the hot seat. Because I got to feel like, well, the thing for him he has to do, I think he's got to get this right, whether that's not spending too much and then maybe laying back and taking a pick at 11 and 23, you know, and getting a Bo Nix or a Penix there or something. Sell the farm and go up and get it. He's got to make the right call. You know, if he doesn't, then his hot seat gets really hot, I think, next year. And there may not be coming back from it. That's where I think he's at this year. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, there's much more pressure in selling the farm and going up and getting that guy. And then that, you know, that guy falls apart. If that guy is Mitch Trubisky, if that guy is Trey Lance, you know, although, you know, obviously the 49ers came right back and got Brock Purdy in the seventh round. That them getting Brock Purdy as Mr. Irrelevance, you know, saved jobs. You know, saved, yeah. John Lynch looks like a genius when John Lynch could have looked like and, you know, could have been losing his job over the Trey Lance. You know, Trey Lance would have gotten a little more time to develop, but that wasn't heading in the right direction and pretty quickly. So, yeah, there's much more pressure in doing that. If you sit still, or if you try, that's sort of like last year's draft. You know, they tried to trap to get the guy who went to the Colts, Anthony
Richardson.
Yeah, Anthony. So they tried to do, but they couldn't pull it off. Now, I don't think there's anyone sitting here going, well, you know, the Vikings blew it because they didn't do whatever it took to go up and get him, because right. We don't know what it would have taken to go and get him. So, you know, the safe play is to sit where you're at. Maybe you're going to get, if you stay where you're at number 11 and you don't get a quarterback, you know, you certainly can get one of the top one or two defenders, top corner, I think Bo Nix is a guy that, you know, then it becomes, you know, this crazy, you know, if you get to 11 and you still have your pick and four quarterbacks are gone, then what? You know, like all the mock drafts that I've been doing where a guy in Cincinnati that I know real well will call, and he calls all the, you know, writers. For what it's worth, I don't think there's a whole lot of value in those picks, in those mocks, but they're entertainment. And each time he's done it with me, I think of four times now, J.J. McCarthy has sat there because the people covering teams ahead of the Vikings all believe, like the Giants. And I don't think that, you know, we're not in a position where they make any trades. So just a straight draft, you know, McCarthy's been there. But I think people are probably assuming he's not going to be there at 11. So then Bo Nix, do you take what, you know, just take your guy, your best hit, best defender, or do you take Bo Nix? You reach on Bo Nix, and just because you're afraid someone else is going to come up, you know, Denver's sitting right behind you. Denver's as desperate as the Vikings are at quarterback. So, you know, that's the game that they're playing. And I think having that 23 pick, even if they don't use it to go into the top 10, I think it's good to have that, because that, if you do like a Bo Nix and he's there somewhere in the teens, maybe you can go up a little bit and get him.
Right.
Whatever he does, you know, he's paid to know what he's doing. And if it, you know, it is a crapshoot, even for the smartest guys in the business, but he'll own this one like no else, because if you blow this one, he won't be around long.
You brought up a good point about Anthony Richardson, that, so you know that for sure, that they tried to go up and get him last year, right?
Well, they wanted him. There had to have been discussions to go up and get him, but it was too much.
Okay, so my question to you is then, and it's kind of unfair, we hadn't really talked about this, but does that, you know, in a perfect world, that the Vikings can go up and get whatever quarterback they want, say for Caleb Williams, what have you, what does them wanting Anthony Richardson tell you about who they might prefer in this draft, the style of quarterback? Does that tell us, like, they would love May over JJ or vice versa, or even Jaden Daniels if they could get him? Or, you know, what does that tell us anything about the style of quarterback, or was it just they just saw his ability and they wanted him no matter, you know, or is that even a factor in it, do you think?
I don't know that you can just, you know, paint with that broad a brush. I mean, obviously Richardson was a dual threat type guy that once he learns that he, you know, he can't survive some of the things he was doing and play an entire season, he'll, you know, I think his career will really take off. You know, I maybe more athletic, but also whenever you ask him, you know, what are you looking for in a quarterback? Now, a lot of times you know what they're looking for, what everyone's looking for, but you want to see where they say it in order. And O'Connell was the first thing out of his mouth. I believe the same thing was the same thing out of Kwesi's mouth. I believe it was accuracy, then mental, you know, toughness, mentally, physically, the processing, be able to, you know, basically what I say, think quick.
Yeah.
And then having the arm strength or the athleticism to, you know, take plays that aren't there. So that's kind of, so, you know, and again, this could be wrong, but reading into that, it's like, you know, sort of see O'Connell wanting a guy that, you know, will follow the rules with him and you know, process the, sort of like Kirk, you know, Kirk was a guy that, you know, he processed. Kirk certainly processed. I always said Kirk's biggest strength also became Kirk's biggest weaknesses, because Kirk was thorough. Kirk wanted to be perfect. Kirk wanted to process. He wanted everything before he made a decision.
Yeah.
And a lot of times under the gun, that became his, because then all of a sudden it was, you know, either holding the ball or checking down, you know, short of the sticks and stuff like that, to where, you know, that, you know, I always said that, you know, if they could find a way to get a guy in a room, train, get an idea how quickly his mind works and how quickly he looks at spots, and but you can't really simulate the pressure that they would get, so that's why it's such a crapshoot, because to me that processing part, it's something that I cannot believe the Vikings did not see when they took Kellen Mond, even in the third round. because that never in one time, even in practice preseason ever, did it look like he could process quickly enough to play at the NFL level.
Yeah, that's when you started talking about process, my mind went immediately to Mond and how he flamed out in that regard. You want to focus when you're looking at a quarterback on picking somebody with physical traits that you can't teach. Like if they got arm strength, you can't necessarily increase that or their ability to process. Those are the things, because if you got a quarterback whisperer or a former quarterback like KOC, he can maybe teach them the other things. So they're not necessarily looking for a finished product, but they're looking for someone who has stuff that they can't teach, right, coach?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's like no one can teach Kirk Cousins accuracy. Well, I think you can improve upon it. Kirk can work at it, improve upon it. But like Drake May would be a good example of right. A guy. You can't teach his size and his arm strength.
Size, that's the
one. Yeah. But also that's kind of what you were saying about Trubisky and some different guys. Like there's probably never been a better arm in the NFL history than Jeff George. But is Jeff George one of the best quarterbacks ever? No, he's one of the best throwers ever.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it than that. Now, like when you look at a Nick Mullins, I personally wouldn't even want Nick as my backup because you saw his arm and his arm strength. And I just don't think he has, you couple that with how careless he was with the ball when given a chance, I would rather have Jaren Hall as my backup. So there are certain things that I think you need the arm strength. You need certain things. And if you don't have that, you're done. But the guys we're talking about in the first round all have something that's first round, appear to be first round caliber stuff. Mm-hmm. So Bo Nix is a guy that, getting back to accuracy, I think he set the NCAA record of 78%. And McCarthy's another guy. It's like he's come out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere, because I guess people were tired of talking about the top three and they needed a new guy. But there is an element there of him that's probably an intangible. His stats in college don't really mean a whole lot because he's playing for a pro coach. I think they're all professionals now with NIL and everything. I don't think there's any amateur football anymore. But, I mean, he's playing in that style, that pro-style offense, and he's not asked to throw it 40 times. But when there are big games going on, I mean, we saw what he could do, and –
yeah.
So where, how do you factor that in? I think he's going to be a top 10 guy.
Well, next week that crapshoot begins and we'll find out. Yeah,
let's throw the dice and get this one over with.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm with you on that. Given that, so we'll just take a break right now. We'll be coming back with Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, KOC had a presser as well last week, and I listened to it on the replay, and you had sent me over a note that he's a nice guy, but he sure says a lot of words during his press conferences. I noticed that he talked a lot of process. You asked him a question, and he didn't answer the question, but he would sure fill in with the process and how they might – do this or do that in the draft. So it's about the process. And that's kind of like you were saying earlier, it brings in the whole thing. He's putting his guards around himself. But, I said to you, I think it's a gift he has for surrounding a topic and not really letting anything out about it. Rick Spielman had a different way, and KO, and certainly Zimmer had a different method than KOC, but what did you think of his presser?
Well, I mean, Rick was very similar. Rick talked forever and didn't say anything either. But he would kind of needle you about the fact that he was doing that.
Yes, I agree. The look on his face was that he knew what he was doing. KOC is still trying to be a nice guy to you, but Rick knows. I'm not telling you nothing, and I'm enjoying not telling you nothing.
Yeah, I would say that, O'Connell is a guy who wants to try and please you, wants to try and please the questioner with you know, a full, thorough, like thinking it through. From a media standpoint, one thing that's hard with him is that, you know, the questions become, there's fewer questions, you know, and if you're, whenever you go on a press conference setting, you know, I don't think people realize how much also the people who are there, who do have ability to get him like off to the side for different things, how much defense is played. Like not every, you know, question that we have is asked in front of a camera now and put on a website and all over the place before you even get back and sit down. So there is some of that. So some of these questions are generic, and a lot of them are TV types that they're just looking for the soundbite. They don't care what it says. But what I do like about Kevin O'Connell, there's been times in the past, and he does this not just for me, but he does it for other people. And Zim was great with me, with, you know, a lot of stuff off, to, you know, sitting down with him talking, and either for guidance or for, you know, for quotes, you know, for actual on the record stuff. So a lot of good stories in that regard with him, I think, for me. But like with O'Connell, like good example would be like last year when Wes, I was doing a big story on Wes Phillips, so a profile on him kind of. And, you know, someone had was talking to someone who in Wes's past, and they were talking about how Wes almost went, you know, to the Chargers after that 2022 season to be their offensive coordinator so he could call plays, kind of get out of that, you know, KOC shadow a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe a delicate subject in season for a head coach. And he talked all about it and given me some examples of what Wes had done in certain games. So I do like, and he's a guy that you can text for, you know, for if you want some guidance on some things. And so he's fantastic from a media standpoint in that regard. We do tease him. I think even he knows that we tease him, you know, a little bit about
his answers,
how much he goes on. And that does limit the number of questions. So in some regard, you know, it's a good tactic to have. Zimmer didn't have the patience. He didn't like certain questions. There's an element of Zimmer didn't like a certain people. So he couldn't hide. Zimmer, you couldn't hide his disdain sometimes for things. Different approaches. You know, there's always, you know, how O'Connell's doing it, the next guy will probably be a grouchy old defensive guy, but there's fewer and fewer of them still around. So the NFL, I always said it, they're complete opposites whenever they get replace each other. But just no more Parcells. The Parcells tree is drying up, I believe, as far as
goes. Yeah, you're probably right. You know, I listened back to it, and I tried to divine anything out of it. And the only thing of substance that I saw was asking him about the kicker situation, and you know, and you know, they already signed Romo was his name, I think, the kicker's name, I can't remember, and then Greg Joseph went to the Packers of all things, and he kind of let on that that there would probably be, he likes to have some competition, some pressure on those kickers in practice. So does that mean that they're going to draft them? They'll probably sign somebody, right? I don't think they'll draft a kicker. He's a draft pick on a kicker.
Well, we all know how important kickers are. We all know that the margin of victory in this league is so small, and they got a guy who's never kicked in the league. So, I could see them drafting a guy if he's there in the seventh. Why not? I mean, if there's a kicker there that's one of the best kickers in college football, I they're in position. I think they, you know, Romo, you just can't say, well, he's going to be your kicker and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I think there will be a kicker selected, you know, sixth, seventh round.
Wow.
Seventh round. And I also think that possibly there will be I don't have all the veteran guys who are out of work at this point, you know, but there's always kickers who are, you know, have been out, who are free agents that will get signed. I could see them. I could see three kickers in camp.
But Sam Darnold loves the tush push. Come on, Mark. They don't need a kicker. What are you talking about?
Well, and they re-signed Brandon Powell to push him over the top. So, and they'll probably draft a wide receiver who's heavier than 175 pounds to push Sam Darnold over the top.
maybe they'll strap that onto TJ Hawkinson's duties since, you know, when he comes back. Probably not after the knee injury went through, but he spoke yesterday. I think it was yesterday or in the past few days. And, of course, there was a lot, you know, I think it's the first time he's talked since he's had injury and surgery and such. And says it's going well. They, you know, asked him for his thoughts on the tackle that, that tore two ligaments in his knee. It was a former teammate of his. So he was trying to be nice and say that, you know, I know this guy Kirby, you know, and he says he was a little bothered that 2 weeks later it happened. He did it to another guy, you know, but he's trying to say, I don't think it's intentional, but he also wasn't totally pleased, you know, that, you know, and I guess what I want to do is ask you what your thoughts on that are. And then you throw in, Harrison Smith's comments from a while back about, you know, how are these guys supposed to tackle anymore? You can't tackle up here. You can't tackle down here. What are you supposed to do, you know, as a defender? So it's what are your thoughts on what TJ had to say and that whole issue?
Well, yeah, what TJ said is what a lot of NFL players say, but they're kind of afraid to say it because it goes against the whole narrative of, you know, head injuries, concussions. And that is a very, very important topic. So I'm not diminishing. It's not the old days where we used to make fun of concussions. It is a serious thing. But a lot of these guys, and he said it, his exact words were, I would rather have deal with a concussion for 2 weeks than I would deal with a torn ACL for nine months. So it's there. I mean, that they, you know, guys have been saying that for a while where, you know, I'd rather be hit in the head than I would have my knee taken out. The league, you know, what the league is trying to do is, okay, well, they're trying, obviously, number one, from a safety standpoint, but also from a public relations standpoint, the NFL doesn't want guys wobbling all over the field anymore. It's not funny anymore. So they got to try and take that out of the game. But they're also trying to get people to hit between, you know, don't hit the knees, don't hit. So sometimes, like that, some of it is called, it's called on quarterbacks, but yeah, so they've trained in the NFL, the defenders, like Harrison Smith said, did not hit the head. Okay, then now what? You know, this is a guy, you know, nine times out of 10, it's a guy that's much bigger than you. You can't just run up and slug him in the chest because you're going to get trucked over, you know? And so there is a balance there. I understand that Harrison Smith and I have almost every time we're in the locker room together, have a discussion about, you know, different, you know, what the NFL has done and the fine system. And he's not a big fan of the fine system and how they handcuff defensive players. And actually I sent him I linked him on a tweet. There was a 90-year-old man doing one of those dream runs, like they do for kids, who they'll run down the field with the ball and the professional players all fall down. Nobody can tackle him. And so the guy was going like 60 yards. He had to be 95 years old.
Yeah.
And they're trying to pretend to tackle him. And I said, this is the NFL has released an instructional video for defenders on how to avoid personal fouls. And then I tagged, you know, I didn't get, I don't think I haven't seen it in a while, but I don't know if he got back to me on that one, but
that was a pretty good one.
There is some of that. It's like, what in the world are these defensive guys going to do? So, you know, and then we're throwing in now the, you know, the hip tackle, you know, how is that going to be legislated? And it's like, it's tough. It's tough on a defender. You know, and I feel for TJ, I think he's, you know, now he said 9 months. Well,
yeah.
9 months recovery period. That puts him at October.
Yeah.
This team doesn't strike me. They've never been a team that's rushed a guy back. They've always looked at the player. With Justin Jefferson last year, certainly they, you know, waited a long time to get him back from a hamstring injury. So you're talking about the injury that TJ had, because I think he had to wait a month for the MCL the swelling to go down before he had the surgery. So I think you're looking at him, you know, probably October return. So that's a month of the year gone.
You know, for my contention has always been part of the problem is, well, you kind of touch on, they're bigger guys, the tight ends. I mean, look at Gronk. He was constantly getting drilled in the legs and constantly injured. I think he would probably, his career might have lasted longer if he not got hit down there so much. Kyle Rudolph get injured down there. I mean, they're so much bigger than the guys tackling. That's when they're coming in and they got to bend over to tackle somebody. It's hard to aim in that area. You know, you're naturally going to drop down to the, towards the knees or at least the thighs anyway. So it's just the nature of the game. And I don't know how you can legislate against it. I kind of agree with where Harrison Smith is coming from. I hate to see that injury like hell. I mean, Hockenson is a great player and you hate seeing him diminished in any way, but you know, what are you supposed to do? I mean, if it's intentional, which I don't think it is, it's a bad, bad thing. You should be outlawed and get out of the game. But I don't know that you can say that. I think there's it's more difficult in split seconds to adjust your body and look exactly where you're going to hit somebody. Because, like you said, you'll get trucked and you might not make that tackle. And then you might not have a job.
Well, you can also get hurt. I mean, it's the flip side of that is, one of the things that made Antoine Winfield a great cornerback, probably one of the best tackling cornerbacks that you'll ever see, was he could come up and shoot low. You know, a guy weighed 180 pounds, and he would go up and he would take the legs out of a pulling guard or a tackle, and he'd cause a pile up, and the guy would be tackled. Well, that's now a penalty. You know, if you come in and you go low on a guy like that, that's a penalty. So yeah, there's a lot of times where you know defenders are like, okay, I brushed his face mask, and I got a fine and I got a penalty, and he went around the corner and grabbed my face mask and, you know, threw me out of the way, and it's not a penalty. So
right,
yeah. You know, it has to be so. I mean, like Deshaun Watson last year, early in the year, came around and he grabbed someone and like was playing with it and threw him down. He did get a penalty, but it has to be something like they can put their hand on the face mask and push and they get away with a little bit of a tug too. But it's different for the defensive player. And
they probably just we all know why that is. You probably want more than anything. Those guys just want, okay, fine. Those are the rules. Then officiate it consistently. You know, it's gotta be tough if you're changing your way of doing tackling or whatever. And, you know, then you see someone else get away with it constantly or, you know, it's, and so the ref's got to be better if you want to make this work.
Well, I just don't know. I don't know what a defender is supposed to do when you know, this whole game is about the low guy win, the low man wins and you want them to not hit the head but they have to go low to play the game. I don't know. I mean, there are going to be a certain amount of injuries. There just is.
You said that maybe October, probably realistically for Hockenson. So what happens in the meantime? I know they got Oliver. They've got Munt is back. They've got Muse is on the roster. Do they have to go out and get somebody? You know, maybe they wouldn't draft a tight end, would they?
No, I wouldn't see them drafting a tight end. They got so many needs. We're doing these draft previews and every position is like high position of need, high position, you know, other than I guess running back now and receiver, you know, it's just, that's what they need. They need this. They need this. But I think they they can get by, you know, Oliver and, you know, Johnny Munt is, as KO likes to say, the best number three tight end in football. That was one of my favorite all-time compliments. Was he's the best number three? It's like, oh.
He meant it seriously, or was he?
Well, yeah, I think he did. He is a good guy to have. He's experienced. Yeah. He does have some things that you can get by with him. You can get, you know, Nick Muse is an interesting guy. He's got some promise. Oliver, yeah. They put a lot of resources into getting him last year. So yeah, I think they can get by. You know, but no, you know, none of them obviously are in TJ's league.
Brian Flores spoke this week as well, and he was pretty close to the vest. You asked him a question about a couple questions. He didn't quite give you what you wanted, did he? About what the defenses give him troubles and those kind of things, or what did you think of Brian Flores and his presser?
Well, that was it. Yeah, that was just he was talking about, you know, because there is a, you know, back and forth the league, and he's obviously known as one of the more creative defensive guys. You know, what he did with Josh Metellus, what he's probably going to do with the defensive end from Miami, Van Ginkel.
Yes.
You know, are things that it's very Belichick like in that. Not saying you completely eliminate positions, but how you look at a safety, how you look at like Von Ginkel, a guy that, you know, you can do things that, you know, that like for, if anybody, any of us would have thought that Josh Metellus would play the most snaps on the defense in the course of a year, and the defense would be playing pretty well for the most part the entire year until they got too beat up. We would never would have guessed it. We never would have guessed that Josh Metellus, they'd have three safeties on the field and Josh would be doing all these things. So he was talking about things that caught his, you know, that he needs to catch up to, that he saw offenses do to him.
Mm.
And he started off, I think Seifert also asked, might have asked the first question.
Yep.
It was like, what are those things? And he was like, kind of like, well, I can't tell you what, you know, and then what we're going to do for it. I said, don't tell us what you're going to do. Tell us what they were. Because it also is fascinating, even covering this league and watching football for over 30 years, you know, like covering it for over 30 years, and then obviously watching it even before that, we don't see the game that they see. We don't see what they see. We don't approach it in the same way that they approach it. Although fans are probably more – fans have never been smarter than they've ever in their history, because they have a lot of resources and a lot of desire to watch film and stuff like that. But still – it's you like to whenever you get a chance to talk to these guys, especially when it's not for a story, unfortunately, and hear them talk about the game and things that they're looking at and they're trying to do. It's fascinating because you're like, wow, you know, as much as I, you know, love the game and much as I watch the game, it's not something that I it's even at this point still that's not something I would have thought of, you know.
I totally agree that one of my favorite times when I was out at Winter Park or TCO was when Zimmer would have all the media in for like a coaching day. He would have, you know, have us all into the theater, have the screen up there, show us some plays and what they were doing and what they were supposed to be doing. He took us behind what I think we see in the All 22, because he was telling all the media, this is what, you know, you might think someone got beat here, but his responsibility was different than what, you know, it he might have got beat on. For me, that was fascinating to see, like, oh my God, you know, I think I know a little bit about this, but I know nothing.
Yeah. And O'Connell did that, you know, does that. I think a lot of head coaches do that.
Yeah.
O'Connell, you know, God love the guy. The idea was for me to come in, spend an hour and have him go through all the draft picks. An hour later, we're still on the second. I think we just got to the second guy. So while we got a lot of information on that, or a lot of things on that first guy, when it was Lewis Cine, you know, and a lot of what he was saying, it hasn't come to fruition yet. So what they saw on tape with him and his reactions and stuff like that looked really good at Georgia, but has not looked real good yet here.
Brian Flores was asked about head coaching interviews, and he said he got none, but he's happy to be here. Do you think he is? I mean, you've been around him a bit. Do you think he's totally happy to be here right now, or is that just, well, I'm not so.
No, I think it's possible to want to be a head coach and be happy where you're at.
Okay,
and I think that's where you know, just from a personal standpoint, he was saying, you know, it's nice not to be to spend the off season taking care of all the logistics of moving. He's got a young family. He's coaching at least one kid in basketball. Yeah. He likes doing that. I think he likes this a little bit of stability of not having to look for a house, move, and go through all that stuff. You know, I'm sure his wife ends up doing a lot of the, you know, getting kids in school and all that stuff. But and he gets to go into another year with guys. And granted, a lot of new faces coming in, a lot of guys leaving. But I do think that he's happy. I also think that he wants to be a head coach. He was asked if he felt that his lawsuit against the league for, you know, discriminatory practices and hiring had anything to do with it. He said he didn't know. I mean, there's no way of proving that. I feel like the way that they ended the season, the way they're not making the playoffs, There certainly could be some of that. The people don't want to touch him because of the lawsuit. But I think that's a question that comes if they would have made the playoffs, done maybe won a playoff game, and they didn't get any interviews. Then I think alarm bells would be going off. I think right now, Vikings fans can look at it like, you know, we can, you know, get another run with this guy. It's a good thing for the Vikings.
So I don't have to worry about him every week of the season next year.
Well, I think, it's a good problem to have. Would you rather have him go 7-10 and you keep him for another year? Or would you rather have him go, 12 wins, surprise everybody, and then he's a head coach in wherever next year?
Yeah. Didn't you ask?
Vikings fans would probably prefer, just like, when Stefanski's, they had their, what year did he leave? But, or Shermer leaving after they go to the NFC Championship game.
Or Mike Tomlin or Tony Dungy.
Tomlin left after a 6-win season, so it's
– Yeah. We knew he was huge for the defense. I did not want him to leave. I didn't want him to get away. So
we knew that he carried himself like a head coach from day one.
There's a long list. Brian Billick, all these guys that leave and go win Super Bowls. That's in Brian Flores' future. That's probably why he's going to hang around one more year and set himself up for a Super Bowl somewhere else. That's how it works. He was. You asked him if he's set at corners, didn't you? And he kind of dodged that one.
Well, I don't think he dodged it. He said no.
He said what Samurai says.
He said, attrition, the number of great receivers that teams can put on the field at the same time. Because, if this quarterback thing doesn't work out at 11, you got to think that, I think the number one edge rusher, that Dallas Turner, people are, thinking he's going to go to Atlanta or be gone before the Vikings pick. So you're thinking, if they don't go quarterback, they don't do something or take a quarterback at 11, it's probably going to be edge rusher or cornerback, just because, they do have some promising pieces there. They brought in Griffin, but man, if you can get a first round cornerback who could be legitimate, like a shutdown cornerback, Brian Flores, all of a sudden the floodgates open on what he's able to do.
Yeah.
If you had depth at corner and you had a Patrick Surtain type guy, man, they could be, because a lot, he didn't play. His career history was a lot of man coverage, and which, like Belichick, when he had great corners, obviously he had a great quarterback. When he had great corners, he had great defenses, and they went and won Super Bowl. And so, that's something that he was a man guy, but then he wasn't a man guy last year because he didn't have the ability to do it that much.
I liked his response to Brian Flores' response to being asked about if he was happy Harrison Smith was back. He says, pure joy. At having Harrison Smith back in the fold. So that's kind of a neat thing. And that shows you that there's respect both ways and there's still a use for Hitman Harry. So that's good to see. And Mark, that's what this is all about for me, doing this podcast every week. Pure joy with you, brother.
When you found out that I was coming back for a 203rd season, pure joy, right?
On that note,
I think Harrison, to me, Harrison still has it. This to me, because if you looked at it, if you just stripped everything aside and you'd say, why is he coming back? They're starting over with a quarterback. It's either going to be a young quarterback or it's going to be Sam Darnold. So it's not ideal either way for a guy who wants to play one more year. I think this just shows you that we talk about pure joy of Flores wanting him back. I think there is a pure joy for Harrison for the game because, he's at a point where he realized, I can't decide now, I don't want to play. And then 5 years later going, I'd like to play one more year. He's got to get it all out of his system and he still loves the game and he still brings something he brings a lot to the table. Especially when you got a guy who's creative like Flores is.
Yeah. Well, so, since it's all about pure joy, we will take a quick break and come back and race to the finish. So come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. All right, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, Justin Jefferson was a no-show at the voluntary offseason workouts this week. What does it mean? Should we be concerned? Should we be panicked? Should we freak out? Or should we say he's overrated? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You know, it's not ideal because there's a new quarterback coming in. I wouldn't be like overly concerned. It's just a sign that they've been talking about this contract, since last summer. The assumption was they would handle it before the season started. Then that got tabled. And to his credit, he could have done what Daniil Hunter did and gotten his money.
Hold in. Yep.
Do a hold in, do a hold out, do whatever. That Daniil did. I can't really fault Daniil. They fine you for the hold out. So now they just hold in, and he's not the only one who's ever done that. Justin Jefferson is a special when it comes to receiver. He's an unusual guy in that he's not the guy that we're going to be talking about here in a minute. Stephon Diggs, he's not that concern, that cancer, that child, that immature guy that, let's try and get a good year out of him so that before he starts whining type of deal.
He's a solid citizen.
But, they need to work out the contract if they want him to come and be a part of, whether it's Sam Darnold, whether it's the draft pick, who knows? They probably want it helps to have him here. It's not a break, make or break situation, but there's value into having him here whenever it's a new quarterback, a new everything. So I guess I would wait till after the draft. If it is a rookie quarterback and that guy does have a chance to start, so the next step will be, does he come to the mandatory mini camp? Right. Last year, if he's not signed, I wouldn't expect him to be here. I wouldn't if I was him.
Yeah, he is under contract this year, though.
He's under contract, but it's a little different than last year when he had 2 years left on his deal. Now he's down to 1 year.
I got
to
get
$19 million would probably get you and me to the new year at least. But for him, he's looking at $19 million is what he'd make this year versus at least over 100 guaranteed. So he's would probably. Not show up unless he has a deal.
Right. So you're right. It's not time to panic yet because we've certainly seen worse. And you just referenced him. Old Stephon Diggs. He got traded away from another franchise. He kind of forced his way out up in Buffalo. And where's he going? I can't remember who he got traded to.
Houston.
Houston. That's right. God, they're loading up. We haven't really talked about that. And I just wanted to say about it. I saw some meme online where it's, they put Stefan's head on top of the Joker in The Dark Knight when he's walking away from the hospital in the nurse's outfit, and everything's blown up behind him because he set all these bombs off, and he's clicking the thing. And it's like it's just Stefan just imploding another Galding franchise because he's – I don't know if he doesn't get the ball enough. I don't know what his problem is. I don't know.
Well, with Stefan, one thing that probably I respect the least about him is that he does all that. But he does it in a veiled way where he always has his little escape hatch that he's, I didn't say that. I didn't do this. Eye rolls. He'll say something. He'll eye roll as if he's not causing any problems.
Right.
And he's causing problems. Yeah, he's happy. He's happy. He was unhappy here. He never really, until he got out of here, he knew that he didn't like Cousins. He was jealous of Cousins and Thielen, that connection they had that 1 year where Thielen's having a 100-yard game every year or every week, stuff like that. So he starts off as a, it's about the team. But eventually it all comes back to if it's not about him, there's going to be a problem. And eventually, Spielman, I actually texted Spielman. I said, your compensation for Stephon, this is looking even better now because, Buffalo gets a second round pick, which is still pretty good because he's got another 4 years on the tires. But it's clearly it's not, even we saw a little bit of that last year whenever McDermott came out and said whenever Stephon didn't show up, he said it was a big deal. And then he quickly backtracked and said it wasn't a big deal. And then there's hints that there's something going on. And then with Stephon, if there's smoke, there's a fire. There's a bonfire somewhere. And he's just like, you know, rolling his eyes as if it's not there. It's a good thing for Houston because he's going to be motivated. He's going to be excited. He's going to be everything. All of the good parts of Stephon are going to be there that first year. Now, where I'd start to worry is if they start losing or if he starts not getting the ball. I would not want him to infect my C.J. Stroud, my rookie quarterback. Because when he got to Buffalo, you're thinking, well, there's nothing Stephon can do to upset the cart because he's got Josh Allen. It's sort of like when NBA players used to go to the Lakers and play for Pat Riley or when troubled NFL players would go to New England and play for Bill Belichick. You don't have the leverage anymore. It's what Randy acted up. He was gone, you know, things like that. So he'll be good for that 1 year. But you saw in Buffalo last year, whenever they changed coordinators, he wasn't getting the ball as much.
Right.
Before that. And there was a stretch where he was not getting 100-yard games.
And they were playing better.
And they started winning. And receivers can sometimes be the guys in the locker room that's what made Thielen different, but it's what makes Jefferson different. A lot of receivers can, if they have a big game and they lose, you may see a happier guy in the locker room. If they win and he didn't do anything, you could see kind of a sullen guy sometimes.
Yeah, that's too bad.
More at that position than probably any other position.
Right. And I just want to tell him, say, Stephon, don't you realize that you need more than one receiver on the team? And the better that receiver does, the less, you know, coverage you might get, you know, blanketed all over you. So it's like you need to work together. But I don't know if he sees that clearly. Oh,
he doesn't. He's, you know, he acts like a child. I'm not saying he is a child. He acts like a child. He's very selfish. He's very self-absorbed. He's immature. But in saying that, you know, Houston's putting together a hell of a team down there
right now.
This year, I expect him to be very good this year. It's,
you know, they got another good receiver, don't they, Mark? That, you know, that Stephon doesn't necessarily come in as the number one.
Well, I mean, number one, number 1A, whatever. I mean, I'm drawing a blank on the receiver, but but they're putting, you know, they got like a Daniil down there now. They've got they got the offensive rookie of the year and they got the defensive rookie of the year coming back. And Slowick, their offensive coordinator, is outstanding. He'll be a head coach someday. It'll be good for him this year, but a long-term deal with Stephon is, we all know how that works out.
He'd better quick get his ring, I guess. I have one more question for you. There's been a lot of talk about the Atlanta Falcons tampering with Cousins. In fact, there was, I think the NFL is looking at it and they're looking at what the Eagles did with Saquon Barkley. Do you think there's any fire there behind that smoke? And if so, could the Vikings, because there's been a precedent set, I can't remember who it was, but there's a draft pick awarded one way or the other as a result of this. Is that something that the Vikings could actually swap picks, as they're saying, with Atlanta for this and move up to 8? And then we got something cooking about moving up, huh?
Well, I think the NFL has to do something because, you know, Kirk in his press conference came out and said that he was talking to them during that, during the you know, what I think they need to do is that Atlanta probably needs to be punished. Philadelphia will need to be punished. And then they got to, like, maybe change the rules a little bit, because the thing is, the team can, during that negotiating period, that 3-day period, the teams can talk to the agent. But, I think that at that point, with the Vikings hadn't signed him. Clearly, he had outpriced himself. He had priced himself out of Minnesota. In those 3 days, they should be able to talk to him and his agent. I mean, not before those 3 days, but in that 3-day window, they should be. That's what's getting Atlanta into trouble, because Kirk came out and was first press conference and saying he's talking to this guy, he's talking to that guy. So he threw him onto the bus. Now, this notion, and I don't know who put it out there, but the notion that they'll switch the Vikings at 11 to 8 in Atlanta.
Come on!
I don't buy that. I mean, what they're using is the Jonathan Gannon. He leaves Philadelphia 2 years ago, or at the end of the 22 season, goes to Arizona. Arizona gets caught tampering. They switched third-round picks last year. Well, it was like 66 for 94. And then Arizona, but Arizona got a fifth-round pick this year. So they made them basically do a trade, you know, of the third-round picks. That's a big difference between saying when a head coach, you know, probably still under contract, I can't see the Vikings going up into the top 10 because of there was tampering for a quarterback who the Vikings had already moved on from and was sending him into free agency. So
you can't prove that. That's hearsay. That's speculation. You don't know.
If I were you, I would swing hard to make that work, but good luck. Good luck making that one work.
Yeah. Well, a man can dream, right? Well, anyway, yeah. On that note, we'll end it this week. Thanks, Mark, for all your insight. Thanks, Mike Woldham, for producing back behind the scenes. Thanks, Joe Johnson, for always putting us here in the first place. And thanks to everybody out there for tuning in. We sure appreciate it each week. We'll be back next week to talk about what, you know, Mark will let us know exactly what the Vikings are going to do because he'll have figured all the tea, read all the tea leaves and put his divining rod in. He'll know just what the Vikings are going to do on.
A lot of things are going to change between now and then. You have no idea.
What a tease. There it is. He's a professional. There it is. So come on back next week. We'll see you then. And thanks again. And until then, skull.
Goal.